Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Episode 376 of the Roguecast, from June 7th, 2022. Check out Squigun. We're back with another episode. It's a big week for comics, y'all.
Yeah, it is. It's giant.
Because it's going to be... I heard that today with, like, whatever the hot equivalent of wind chill is, heat index, is that what they call
sure,
it?
Sure.
That it's going to be about, like, 107 today. I feel like it's a good day to stay in and read your comics.
That's probably
if
true.
You can... get comics this week and then hide in the cool shadows and read them.
We really need to come up with something cooler than heat index, though.
Yeah, it should be
wind chill is cool. Heat index is kind of lame.
Wind chill is like sounds like it could be a supervillain name. You need something.
How about like the thermal danger zone?
It's a little wordy, but I like where your head is at.
Yeah, that's this one. I'm gonna workshop
what's
it.
What's the scorcher? It's a scorcher.
I think that's just what old timers say. Yeah, ours is scorcher right. out there.
You're in the scorch zone.
Scorch zone. Yeah, maybe the scorch zone. We'll workshop it. And we'll get it right to Jim Spencer at KXAN.
Yeah.
And get introduced to the weather.
I guess that's too close to the suck zone, which is
very... Yes, the suck zone. Yes, the suck zone is very real.
I don't know if people have any idea what you're talking about, but they did a Master Pancake Theater, the Mystery Science Theater local version kind of guys, did a Twister one time. And awesomely, they had Jim Spencer.
He was like a pop-up video thing.
He popped up in the middle of their spoof of it with facts that were not true about tornadoes.
The fact that was the Jim Spencer was so game for it. But the one
when Dusty
is
talking about the suck zone in Twister, Jim Spencer at first pops up to say, "Of course that's not true," and then he's like, "I'm kidding. Of course it's true.
It's called the suck zone.
it's the suck zone." I will always respect him for that, and also the Master Pancake Theater for getting him.
Yep, that was great.
That was good.
Anyway, news for the store. D&D Legend of Baldur's Gate is currently in its pre-release, so we can sell boxes, but nothing else.
That's Magic the Gathering D&D
right.
Legend of Baldur's Gate.
I figured if people didn't know, they would just play
it. It keeps on messing with my head. Like, people are just asked, like, do you have Baldur's Gate? And I was like, let me go back to the D&D section. I'm like, you're talking about Magic the Gathering.
And this is particularly a Commander set.
Commander
correct?
Legends. Yeah. So the booster packs are, like, larger. There's, like, You get three of them instead of six in the pre-release pack. It's
But they have 20 cards per pack, so you're getting like close to the same amount. It's just structured differently. I don't know how y'all do these crazy magic things. People seem to be liking
Dave,
it.
Dave, you and I, we don't magic.
No, we don't magic.
I do magic. There's some cool stuff. I haven't looked at the cards yet.
But like, just based on the interest and the amount that we sold over pre-release weekend, it seems like interest is high.
Yeah. We also got a bunch of games. We got a game called Rescuing Robin Hood, which I believe is when you're the merry man rescuing Robin Hood, which is cool. We got Death in Space RPG, which I think might be Morkborg related.
Morkborg.
It feels like
that's the heavy metal game, y'all. It's like the death metal RPG, fantasy RPG.
Right.
All the craziest one's... fight the devil with a, you know, all the metal album cover style.
That one has sold very well so far.
Morkborg.
No,
Death in Space.
Death in Space. Oh, okay, cool.
But Death in Space is it's by the same guys, Free League, that do Morkborg, but also the Alien RPG, the One Ring RPG.
Okay.
They do really nice
guys.
Games.
Seem like they know what's up.
And then we got the DC Deck Builder Crisis Collection. They're finally putting some of these back. So these were the smaller ones that turns DC Deck Building from a co-op game from a competitive game to a co-op game.
That's pretty cool.
And makes it a little harder. And these are the first two crises. There were four total, so there'll be another one that does the pack later. But it's a bigger collection of cards, and it's nice to see that stuff getting back in print. And then Asmodee dropped like 100 games this week.
It's true, they did.
There's three that are sort of like puzzly, like small puzzly games: Six Sticks, Color Fox, and Stick Up.
Yep.
There's a little tiny game which we have in our window display right now called Pocket Master Builder. That's a sort of resource resource management, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
There's Anomaly. These all have different mechanics. I haven't had a chance to look through all of them. There's King's Forge, which is a third edition of a dice-based game where you're trying to forge weapons and that kind of thing. A War of Whispers, which is a competitive game that is kind of Game of Thrones fantasy politics. Archmage, where you're trying to become the Archmage. Planetarium, which actually was created in cooperation with NASA.
Uh-oh.
And is about sort of like, you know, planets and stars and that kind of thing. So yeah, there's all of that stuff.
In other words, it's a game lover's delight.
It's a game lover's delight. And then also worth mentioning that Free Comic Day or Free RPG Day keeps heading toward us. That is June 25th, and we haven't got our games yet, but it should be soon.
Yeah, a few weeks.
We'll do a preview when we get those. All right, speaking of games, Monte Cook has announced an open license for the Cypher system. You all know the Cypher system. This is like it's based on, what is it, the Numenera, that kind of stuff, maybe?
Yeah.
They did.
And Monte Cook is a legend in the industry. Yeah. You know, he's worked on, I mean, like, I know he's worked on, like, very, like, D&D 5th edition, and I think 3rd and 4th, to be honest. I think he's had a hand in all of them.
So this is a game that they've done a few interesting, the Cypher system stuff that we have right now is, like, there was an alternate dark superhero thing we talked about a couple weeks ago. They've got that playing first responders, like paramedics and cops and that kind of thing. There's one that's like the Dark Fae kind of thing. It's sort of off to the beaten path RPG stuff.
Yeah, but it is still like, I think a little on the crunchier side, a little like maybe 1 foot closer to D&D than, say, to indies, I think. I've never played the Cypher system. So they're going to make it open license. Does that mean that they are going to allow other people to just develop, or that they are going to put out a generic version of the game for people to do what they will with?
Both.
Oh, okay.
There's a Cypher system reference document that online, and that is now thing you can use, and they announced a couple of the forthcoming open license titles. They all sound good. So for one thing, the Cypher system, the big thing right now is what the game Old Gods of Appalachia based.
The popular podcast
just kickstarted. We will be getting that for the store. That podcast is getting an RPG, and it's their big like tentpole, I guess. But they have three listed in this article. One is the Mystery Flesh Pit National Park RPG. So it is 50 years of cosmic horror as a park ranger, a tourist, or even a lab fugitive. So this is, I'm going to read this. Jim Jackson, a small-time Texas oil man, opened the gates of the Mystery Flesh Pit roadside attraction back in the 1970s. It was the crown jewel of Midwest Texas tourism, even as it became a national park. But years of mismanagement, mining operations, and the accidental catastrophe of 2007 changed everything. It says it's basically a stunning mix of cosmic horror with corporate and government satire.
Weird. I kind of like that, though.
Yeah, it sounds fun.
I think if you're opening a side show attraction, maybe Flesh Pit is maybe not the greatest name for it.
I love this. GM Roulette. A fun, fast-paced way to play an RPG on a night you don't have anything planned, or you just want a few hours of fun with no prep. The roulette-style game gives everyone a moment in the GM seat with rules and guidelines for a fun, successful, guided, improvised game. Plays in 3 hours less with no prep. That is right up my alley, and sounds super fun.
I wonder if it has, like, tables to randomize the genre and stuff like that.
It must. But that sounds super cool. I'm into it. And then finally, Blood and Chrome, which is a cyberpunk setting for it. Set in the cyberpunk city of New Orleans.
It's a little renaissance for cyberpunk games. Because there's also, in addition to the big one, Cyberpunk, 2077?
Yep. 2020 is the RPG, right?
Oh, okay. I thought they were 20...
Cyberpunk Red, and it's neither one. It's I forget what the actual date is.
Okay.
2077 is a video game. 2020 is the original RPG. Red is the current one, and I think that was smart to get rid of the year itself.
Yeah. It's always going to make it awkward. But you got that Cyberpunk, you have, of course, the long-running Shadowrun, and there's, like, several indie Cyberpunk games. There's at least three different ones over there.
Yep.
And there's also, whatever that one is with the space elevator thing in it.
I don't know if we still have it. It's one of those that went out, I think.
Yes. Did it have the word seed or something
Android,
in it?
It was Android, but it was something, it was something else. Yeah.
Anyway, but yeah, there's lots of options floating around.
Yeah. Cool. Anyway, that all sounds cool. I'm sure we'll get some good games out of it. And now we got a whole bunch of trailers to discuss.
Yes. Let's lightning round them, because I know there's a fair number.
Yes. Okay.
And also, by the way, a lot of these trailers were like mood trailers or just like 30 seconds to a minute, so they didn't have a ton of content.
All right. So let's start with the non-Netflix stuff, because Netflix dropped a ton of stuff. So let's start with Disney Plus, which had two. The Pinocchio teaser. This is the live-action Pinocchio in the same way that Lion King and Jungle Book and all those were live-action.
Yep. And notably has Tom Hanks as Geppetto.
The voice of Pinocchio is, right? Did they say anything about that?
Pinocchio barely makes an appearance at the very end.
Is he? Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is it Geppetto's story? You're saying in the trailer, not
Yeah, in the trailer.
It is still called Pinocchio, though, right? They didn't call it Geppetto?
No, it's called Pinocchio. So I imagine
But I wonder if
same.
He might have a focus. But I saw, like, You know, of course, live action versions of like what do they call it, Pleasure Island or whatever. Mm-hmm. Speaking of flesh pits,
wow.
Hey, that's what it was
Pinocchio
called.
Is such a bizarre story.
I saw the it's like a very specific fairy tale that was like written like I think it's French.
I think it freaked me out as a kid. It was like
freaky. It's the whole thing with them turning the donkeys. That's freaky.
Yeah,
it's weird. And Monster the Whale is scary at the end.
It's very acid tripping.
It is. It is. So if you've got the acid, you're gonna want to take it before this.
So this is written. This is directed by Robert Zemeckis, which is notable. He's a good guy for this.
Yeah,
right.
Cynthia Erivo is the Blue Fairy.
Mm-hmm.
Benjamin Evan Ainsworth is Pinocchio. I don't know who that is. Joseph Gordon-Levitt is voicing Jiminy Cricket, and Keegan-Michael Key is voicing Honest John.
Is that the guy from Pleasure Island, I think?
Yeah.
And I know that there's like also like a con man Fox there. I saw him from Pleasure Island.
Yep.
Pinocchio's maybe like a slightly weird lesson. Like a lot of those weird old fairy tales about like, oh, if you step outside your home, that everybody is waiting to prey upon you and, you know, abuse you and kidnap you. And I don't know if that specific paranoia is like a real concern these days. But that said, I do like Pinocchio a lot. It's also, of course, got amazing animation, that original.
But it's also, isn't this coming at the same time that Netflix is doing a Pinocchio as
well? Yeah, Guillermo del Toro is doing one.
Right.
Yep. But it's going to be CGI.
And it has Ewan McGregor as the Jiminy Cricket.
Well, this one is live action with CGI stuff in it.
Right, right.
But like Geppetto's real.
Yeah. I think I find myself...
Wait, Tom Hanks is real?
Real-ish.
I think I find myself gravitating more towards the Netflix Guillermo del Toro as opposed to this, mainly because
I want to see the they show a very sweet scene where he's like praying to the fairy to give him a real boy, and he's like starlight, star bright, but he says it Tom Hanks super super earnest and sad.
But I think I'd rather see something a little more reimagined as opposed to this one, which is going to be more faithful to the cartoon that I don't have a lot of love for, even though there are moments that I like.
The other thing, of course, is like. Although I saw a fair number of familiar elements, sometimes they're like very faithful in these adaptations, and sometimes they basically like the Jungle Book made a completely new story for that.
Yeah, the thing is like because I liked the Jungle Book,
or at least reinterpreted it a lot.
I liked the Jungle Book one, and I liked the Aladdin one, and so I have.
Then
a
there was
thing.
Lion King, and then there
and
was
Lion King was not great. Beauty and the Beast is solid.
Yeah,
it's
Beauty
not
and
amazing,
is
but
solid.
It's solid. So they generally have a pretty good track record with these. I think a lot of people on the internet, there's the meme of like stop remaking your animated movies, or at least make Atlantis, which of course never going to happen. But
no, I think they will make Atlantis.
You think a live action?
They did Mulan and turned it into an action thing. Although that I know didn't go over well for them.
I like
but
that
I think,
too.
I did too. But I know that one also sort of had like stepping into sort of somewhat risky cultural landscape.
Yeah. Yeah.
I actually think they will do Atlantis or even like Black Cauldron or something like that, and then they'll make it like probably do a good version of it, I think, of the live-action versions.
What about the Three Caballeros? Will they make that?
No.
they already had that. It's called Three Amigos.
I mean, kind of, yeah.
All right, the other Disney one is the Strange World teaser. This is a new CGI animated thing.
It's a movie?
It is a movie. And it looks like...
It's all phantasmagorical.
It's all phantasmagorical. It reminds me of Atlantis. It is like pure adventure. I don't think there's music in it. It looks like it is not a musical.
Kind of pulp sci-fi.
Yeah.
But its world looked as weird as Wizard of Oz is. It's not like... It's not quite... I didn't quite have that like steampunky pulp vibe. It felt more like... we were comparing it to the comic Twig that just came out from Scotty Young.
It definitely
where, like,
vibe.
You know, like... there's all sorts of weird walking trees and living plants and, never-ending story weirdness, too. It looked pretty well made. I don't know if it's quite something I'm looking for, but it looked well made.
I was into it. It looks like a fun trailer.
Clearly, it's going to have very lush visuals and all
so
that
stuff.
So
we only know... I mean, Jake Gyllenhaal voices the main character.
Right.
And I see on the cast list that Alan Tudyk is involved, so he's
so he probably
on,
plays a bird.
He probably plays a bird, or the dog, or...
Yeah, some animal.
Some alien animal.
We got a sort of a mood trailer for League of Their Own on Prime. No dialogue.
No dialogue.
All,
it was
all sort of music
visual.
And visual. But we did see Darcy Carden is in there.
Love her.
Greta. I can't remember. Who are the two leads?
Which one is this?
This is League of Their Own.
Oh, yeah. Do people remember what League of Their Own was?
I was going to say...
They should. I mean...
This movie was, like, early 90s? You know, like, people... we have had time for, like two generations or something.
Do people know? I mean, it
came out in 92.
Is it World War II? What was the reason there were women playing baseball?
World War II, a professional all-female baseball league springs up in the Midwest.
Right. It was an early breakout Tom Hanks movie, yep, right? He was the coach,
yep,
and it had, like, Gina Davis and Madonna.
Directed by...
I've only seen League of Their Own maybe
Penny
once.
Penny Marshall.
Oh, that's right. It's a Penny Marshall movie.
I've never seen it.
You've never seen it?
Yep.
Interesting.
Oh.
It's good.
It is very good. And you like Gina Davis.
I think that may be why you're like, people don't know this. I'm like, everyone I know knows this movie.
Yeah, but we all know old people.
But it was also big.
We want people to listen to our podcast who might be in their 20s.
I know young people who know this movie.
They don't know League
But it was also big because, like, Madonna was in it at, like, the height of her powers in a lot of ways. And
that was actually, that was when she was a necromancer.
It's true.
But also, and I thought that was a cool album.
Necromancy. No. So I'm looking at it. This is definitely a different... I'm looking at the names on the IMDb, and I see Abby Jacobson from Broad City and Jersey Cardin, or maybe they're Carson Shaw and Greta. I don't know who that is. I don't see who's the obvious coach. So they're doing... I don't know exactly what they're doing here.
So let me just quick ask. This is based on a true story?
No.
Okay.
But I also see Nick Offerman is in this. Maybe he's the coach. Rosie O'Donnell is in it again, and she was the co-lead, basically.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Isn't that... this happened, right? Like, in real life?
I don't know. Maybe.
I think it did.
You very definitively said it wasn't based on a true story.
No, it's not. I don't know.
It feels like the kind of thing that's based on a true story. Nick is looking it up.
Sure.
We'll find out. Now, maybe very loosely based on a true story.
The Moon Trilogy, like, the cast is good.
They play a Fleetwood Mac song.
That's right.
What's the song? I can't remember the name of it. The one where with the one winged dove is the lyric. It's that song.
This was fun. I'm not dying to see it or anything, but it looks fun.
So the thing is, it was a real thing. Okay. I mean, a lot of the characters are obviously fictionalized, but the event, sure, like. Because
there was a women's league.
Yeah,
kind of thing.
All the men were at war, so, you know.
Okay.
For sort of to cool. bring
so
back
So we can
some
assume
time.
That is this a show, right?
This is a show,
yes.
On Fox.
That they will just, they will sort of do an expanded version of this.
Yeah, the only problem I foresee is that everything Prime shows is boring in some way. So.
Not everything. You got The Boys.
The Boys is the exception. The Boys is the exception that proves the rule. Yeah.
I want Prime to succeed, and I like this movie a lot. I think it's a... If you watch it, I remember it very well.
Do you want to see it spun out into a season? Or two? Or ten?
I think there's a show.
What about 20?
I think there's a show there. And I think it's covering idea.
They also have Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, which if this aims in that sort of same spot...
I need to watch
really
that show.
It's really good.
I think this is also a story worth... telling a new generation.
Because
I think that's the...
Why bother? I hear everybody already knows about the movie from 1992.
Because 30 years ago. Tom Hanks is sort of... You kind of seek out his stuff. You even, like... You'll watch some of the older stuff.
Oh, God, it was 30 years ago.
It was 1992. Oh,
I just aged 10 years.
Yeah.
Making me 30.
Somebody pull up that gif from Saving Private Ryan.
That's what just happened.
Yeah.
And next up we have, I think the one we were all most excited about, which was the Prey trailer for Hulu.
You said all most excited about. It sounded like you said almost excited
almost
about.
Almost excited about.
It's almost exciting.
Well, they released that sort of teaser, and that kind of provoked a pretty...
That was pretty cool, too.
Cool response.
So this is Prey is the new Predator movie.
Yes.
Get
it? Because Predators have Prey.
I see. Interesting. Those words are connected.
Yeah.
This is set a few hundred years ago, some hundred years ago. I think sort of dawn of colonization in America.
Yeah, because I saw some colonizers.
Yep. But it is focused on a
Comanche woman.
But also, who's the person with her? Is it her brother?
Friend? It's just like a hunting party.
Okay, and they're the two that are alive.
She is like the hunt. She is like she's trying to be a hunter. And it opens with her like saying, "You know, why do you want to be a hunter?" She's like, "I can't do it."
Yeah.
So they've got a. That woke feminism making its way into our movies, guys.
I think the thing that's the most striking about this trailer is the cinematography. Just some of the shots.
It's Dan Trachtenberg, isn't that his name? The guy directed Ten Cloverfield Lane.
Which we all recommend.
Yep, it looks great. Like, that is a big part of why I'm excited, even though they've flubbed every single Predator sequel.
Not everyone.
Even Predator 2.
There's a bunch of interesting things going on in here. Like, aside from the fact that it looks cool, she seems cool, she ties, like, twine or rope or something to her axe and makes it so that she can throw her axe and then sling it back.
She makes a flying guillotine.
She makes a flying guillotine out of it. And I just read, there's this article floating around about how there's also a version of this film that was filmed in Comanche,
which
is just like an extra, like, nice touch.
That's awesome.
The main of the movie is filmed in English, so, you know, you're not going to need to read subtitles or anything like that.
You big babies.
But there will be, you don't like subtitles, Randy.
Actually, I've got the point where I like subtitles.
Honestly, I would prefer it to be in, like, Comanche.
I kind of would like it, too, yeah, I think.
It'll give it a little more of that distance. I think
And colonizer speaking English. That's what I need before the Predator stabs.
Weirdly, the colonizers also speak Comanche.
Unless one of the colonizers is, like, the great whatever of Arnold Schwarzenegger's character.
The colonizers will speak English, but they will have Comanche subtitles.
What was I going to say?
I don't know what you were going to say. We interrupted the nonsense.
Yes, the gibberish completely flummoxed me. Anyway, that will give it a cool air of authenticity. And yeah, I think I might prefer to see it that way myself. Oh, I know what I was going to say is I expect that this is going to be largely a visual movie, as like the kind of the original Predator was, with a sort of minimal script.
Right.
So, and I might be wrong. There may be more dialogue than you think, but I doubt it. It's not like there's actually going to be tons and tons of subtitles to read, probably.
I mean, that short scene that we got of her hunting a bear.
Oh, yeah.
Cool as hell.
And then, of course, the predator.
The bear is, like crashing through the barricade or whatever that's, like, protecting her, some tree roots or something like that, and it's, like, seconds from getting her, and it just, like, flops over dead, and you see it get dragged out, and then it's, like, lifted up by some invisible thing, and you're like, oh, shit.
I forget how, like, resonant those sounds of those predator clicks.
Yeah. The trailer does a really good job of making Predator scary again, because that's the thing.
After all these movies that have come out that have all kind of sucked.
Yeah.
That, you know, you like, even those sounds kind of lose their... They've long since lost, I think, their intensity. But, like, when they're handled well, it reminds you of, like, how strong it could be. And, like, I think potentially it could be... This could be pretty good.
I think, honestly, just like Alien...
I mainly trust the director.
Just like Alien, just like Terminator, there's room to do good stories with these characters, even though there's been so many bad ones.
I think the best idea they're doing with the whatever the next Aliens thing, if that's still proceeding forward, is that it's going to be a TV show. And I think having time to grow characters and stuff like that is a good idea.
I agree.
I think it's the franchise. I would not be interested in another Alien movie at this point, but a TV show, maybe.
Maybe. I honestly feel like we should be done with Alien.
I'm done with the Ridley Scott's version of it and the Prometheus stuff.
Yeah. No one cares,
God.
So Netflix dumped a ton of stuff. There's a bunch of trailers out.
Because this is the... What are they calling it? Is it the Week of Geek or...
Netflix Palooza? I don't know.
There's actually like an event happening. And that's why they're releasing
like
so
all their
many.
Genre nerdy stuff?
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
So we got the School for Good and Evil trailer, which I feel like this is based on a book series or something.
It is. It's a YA book series. I guess it's about like a pretty big
book.
Pretty big thing. And to get the two leads that they've gotten into this show is... Charlize Theron, who obviously plays the evil.
She's been on the downward turn ever since she started Fast and the Furious movie.
and then the other teacher is Kerry Washington. Who are very big names to get.
Well,
although
this is a movie,
not
a TV show.
Right.
So.
Is it a movie?
Oh, okay. I guess I thought it was a show, too.
It's a movie.
So I was actually not quite clear on the concept. It's a school where, like, the good and evil people from fairy tales are taught to do their thing or something?
Be good and evil, yes.
That's a weird concept.
So Snow White and the Witch are at the same, like, kind of school, maybe?
Yeah, and then, like, what, they're going to go off and, like, it's not like they're putting on a play or something like that. So is it teaching them how to, Snow White, how to Fairy Princess, and the Witch, how to
They're
going to
put
poison?
On a play of life, Dave.
Is
play
the,
of life.
This was kind of a mood trailer, like a lot of the Netflix stuff. Mm-hmm. So we didn't get much in the way of story, but the concept of fairy tales blending with sort of a Harry Potter school, it sounds interesting at least.
Or at least it sounds like a big Hollywood commercial bit, easy pitch.
Mm-hmm. are you saying that somebody made it like a chart and just threw darts at it to combine
Harry
things?
Harry Potter, fairy tales, done.
Harry Potter, once upon a time, done. but actually it may indeed, for people who were like, looking
people
for something
Once
Upon a Time ended, this has some pretty quality people associated with it, and the trailer what little it showed looked halfway decent. So hopefully they can pull it off.
Then we got a mood trailer for 1899, which is the new series from the guys who made Dark.
Which I never watched.
I never watched either. I've heard good things.
I've heard great things, but I've never...
Is it German?
It's either German or Norwegian, I think. Yeah. And I've never sat down and read subtitles on that one. However,
you should watch it. It's supposed to be good.
However, this concept sounded interesting.
They're on a big boat?
They're on a big boat, and then they, in the open sea, they run across a ship that seems deserted. And then, from the description is, it's a multilingual show, because there's a host of different, Italians, Germans, English on this boat.
Okay.
And then weird shit starts to happen.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah. So I like the concept.
It's a good mood trailer, too. It's like it's got some nice production value.
It's like, what if H.P. Lovecraft got paired with the Titanic?
Yeah.
Out of curiosity, have either of y'all seen the sort of horror movie Triangle?
No.
No.
Worth catching. A group of, I feel like they're 20-somethings, are out like on one of their rich ones, like has a yacht, and they go out into sea, and they find a big derelict ship, and they get on board it, and weird shit starts to happen, and it's pretty cool. It's definitely one of those to go into without knowing too much. It's fun to watch things unfold and be surprised, maybe.
I'm putting that on my list because it sounds cool.
I think you will like it, Nick. And I have a feeling you might as well, Randy. Okay, but Nick, check it out. You press play, see what happens.
Oh, I remember hearing about this.
I think that was on my watch list. Yeah,
be careful about reading a quick synopsis of it.
You want to watch it on Letterboxd.
Oh, it's on my watch list. There we go.
And
it's also in my watch list as well.
All right.
Already.
Well, let this reinforce that Letterboxd list. All right, what else we got?
We got the trailer for the Midnight Club. Coming October 7th.
Speaking of YA books, it's another...
It is
a book series.
Yeah. But this is Mike Flanagan's next thing.
Yes.
Yeah. And he's actually directing this. It's not just his production company or something. So, I don't know about them, but I generally like, if he has an interest in it, it's probably good. I have a friend who I think, she said she got that. I just saw her posting that she'd gotten it for her birthday, one of those books, and hasn't read it yet. Who has time to read? But again, I'm betting it's probably pretty good if Flanagan wanted to make it. Cool. I think people know Flanagan's name these days. We talk about it often enough, but if you don't, he made Haunting of Hill House, Haunting of Bly Manor, Midnight Mass, and a bunch of good movies.
Yep.
He's a horror guy who cares about character and story, and can be both very dark and very human sometimes. So
he's my favorite horror guy, for sure.
He's super good. He has a lot of the qualities that I think people like in Stephen King's novels, which makes sense because he was very influenced by and has even adapted several Stephen King's.
Yeah.
I forgot that Heather Langenkamp was going to be in this.
Oh, from the original Nightmare on Elm Street girl.
Okay. Heather.
All right. This is... The premise, as I remember, isn't it like basically they're all people who...
These kids make a pact sort of when they die they have to hang around and I forget what the ultimate...
So they're all dead?
Not all of them dead. I think they all are, dying. This is kind of like a...
Yeah, that's what I thought. It was like they were all dying of disease or whatever.
Yes.
Oh, interesting. So that actually, as an entry point, I see how that would resonate with Flanagan. A lot of his stories take on heavy stuff.
This is basically... The teaser trailer is them just having, a little blessing that they say before their meetings.
Right. But it's a cool blessing. It's interesting sounding. It's mysterious. It sounds occult a little bit. And the camera's panning around, and you're just seeing a variety of young faces. They're all pretty young, right? Mm-hmm. Teens? 20-something?
Maybe? In that ballpark.
Right, somewhere around in there. I'm really looking forward to this. I think it's a good trailer, but there's not a whole lot to remark on.
Right.
But Flanagan's reputation precedes him.
The last couple trailers are also spooky, by the way. Guillermo del Toro's Cabinet of Curiosities, which is like an anthology series of eight shows.
What's this on?
This is a Netflix. These are all Netflix.
Yeah. Oh, Netflix. Okay.
And it had a bunch of different directors. I saw the guy from the Babadook was on there.
Director of Splice. It was basically a lot of very good horror movies from the past couple of years.
What is it? A Girl Walks Alone at Night.
Yeah,
or whatever.
A Girl Walks Alone at Night. He's good at doing this, of collecting stories and getting good people involved.
Is he?
He did a couple of them.
Mama, I guess if we're talking about this, he has mentored some filmmakers out there. I was thinking this, those weren't anthologies per se, but yes, he has mentored some people, and I need to, for me at least, the films that have come from the people who he kind of mentored, I have broadly liked more than I like his movies. But I'm not the biggest Guillermo del Toro fan. I sometimes just like his stuff.
I think he's got great energy. Like, if he is in love with something, he kind of radiates.
Oh, the man himself, like, if I hear him talk, it's kind of like listen to Grant Morrison. He himself is infectious.
Yes, that's what I'm talking about.
I don't mean to say that he has the plague or anything. I mean, his enthusiasm is infectious.
He might, though. We don't know.
But I just wish I liked his movies as much. I actually find his visuals a little overly precise and distracting and stuff. I never saw... So what was the one that he, like, did he get an Academy Award for, like, Shape of Water or something?
Yeah, he did. Yeah. So the movies that the directors are coming
Was it, like, just special effects and sound and stuff? Or did it win, like, any notable awards?
Oh, no, it won Best Picture.
Did it win Best Picture?
It did.
Yeah, good job, Guillermo.
So it's The Babadook, The Empty Man, which is the...
That's to say the directors
of these movies. Yeah. So The Empty Man, which I know Dave...
Oh, that's one I just watched. Yeah, that was interesting.
Yeah. So Narcos... Which was Netflix series, but I guess he's coming on.
The Empty Man, by the way, I just because I know a little bit about that director, he's the guy who was the director of photography for David Fincher.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And he's now, I think, expanding into doing movies on his own, and he seems to have a good eye, not just for visuals, but for story, too.
Firestarter, which is unfortunate because I heard that was a horrible thing.
Can't win them all. Can't win them all.
One of the directors of Twilight, which, you know, whatever.
Sure.
A director of Cube, which, one's seen Cube,
man,
that was a good one.
Esoteric and good movie, yeah.
And Girl Walks...
the Cube?
Oh, no.
No, just Girl Walks Home Alone at Night. And then the big one, I think, for probably for a lot of people, is going to be the director of Mandy, which is going to be bizarre as hell.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mandy was simultaneously slow and trippy and manic and gory.
Yeah. All right, the last thing is the very much the comic story related thing, and that is the Sandman teaser.
Yes.
We've been waiting on this since they announced the trailers.
There was some other trailer before because it showed the guy from Game of Thrones.
Yeah, it showed the entry point.
It was like
of
a super teaser trailer.
Was it Crowley or whatever his name?
He's clearly an Aleister Crowley knockoff.
Right.
The guy who ends up trying.
He's trying to go for death, and he ends up with
he captures Dream.
Dream.
Yeah. Very cool premise.
Yeah.
This teaser looks like we're getting a little bit more. We get glimpses of
Who is it who runs his household? Is it Kane? What Kane?
Oh,
and Abel?
No. It's Lucian.
Lucian,
the librarian. I thought you were talking about like the
which has been gender flipped here.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know who the actress was, but there's a little bit of that going on. I did glimpse Death in there.
Death
too,
is in there. I'm excited to see all of this because
you see him sort of like with the nightmare dream dust or whatever.
Yep. We get to see his cool looking mask, which I was very glad that they kept. Mm-hmm. Just like the feel and look of it, it radiates Sandman. I mean, it definitely looks like the comic.
And he looks, he looks the way, he has the pretty pasty look of the character in the comics.
For sure.
As drawn by, I'm going to say, early Sam Keith and then Mark Dringenberg in those very earliest days, kind of setting the tone for it.
We also see Joanna Constantine.
Right, which is like an ancestor of John Constantine, for people who don't know. But very much kind of like him, maybe somewhat untrustworthy con man sorceress.
And the woman that she was talking to was Hetty. Was that Mad Hetty? Or
it was Mad Hetty.
Which I thought was really cool. Yeah. I've heard that Merv is going to be in this.
For Pumpkinhead.
Voiced by Mark Hamill.
Mark Hamill, yep. We also see Matthew the Raven at the very end.
And we also see, it looks like, the Corinthian.
Yep.
Definitely is the Corinthian. So, here's the thing. I don't know why, but for some reason, I'm getting slightly bad vibes off of this.
Really?
Yeah, not bad vibes, but there's something... Randy, you know how you would... I remember you mentioning about American Gods, that sometimes it looked a little cheap, production-wise.
Yeah.
There's actually some stuff in here. Maybe it's the kind of wide-open sets, or the sort of CG when you see the Dream Realm at its height and stuff like that.
Right.
That looks a little CG-ish to me. or when he's on these, like, fog-bound sets... And I'm like, oh, that looks a little, like, slightly cheap or something like that.
I get that.
Now, it's like a high production value version of cheap. So, but I have yet to see a scene that where what I really want is Neil Gaiman's writing to come through. And no one has shown a scene long enough for me to see if that happens.
Yeah, I get that.
I have a feeling, just because I know he is heavily involved in this, like, I think he was there for much of the filming, if not.
You know, they did an audio version of the like the whole series a few years ago.
It was good.
And I tried it, and I could not get into it. It had, what's her name, Kat Dennings as Death. And I was like, oh, yeah, Death is kind of, like, got that sort of perky quality that she does. She's going to be good. It's going to be good. But, man, I tried listening to it. No. I could not get into it.
I never finished it, but I did listen to some of it. I did not. I was not repelled. Anyway. I just got...
you know, that's just sort of like a little bit of energy I'm getting. It's really hard to tell, and most people I know seem to be really into it. So maybe it's just my own innate cynicism.
I mean, you are Hater Dave.
But if I am correct and it stinks, believe me, I'll be cheering. I really hope it comes off.
I have a feeling that Netflix is banking on this being our Game of Thrones.
Oh, I think you're right.
I mean, they're...
I hope it's better than it looks.
and see, I didn't get that vibe of like, kind of cheap CGI.
Neil Gaiman's writing is like, you're there for the writing. Honestly, even with all the great artists there were on Sandman, the writing was always at the heart of it.
But I guess I just don't care because people said the Halo had cheap CGI, and I was like,
I don't always pick up on the cheap CGI.
Halo had a little cheap CGI.
Dave's eyes are just more keen at seeing.
Dave's focused on looking for
he took the upgraded CGI eyes.
Listen, there's a scene in The Abyss when she's talking to the militaristic guy, Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio, about the maybe the aliens are peaceful, and she's like, you have to see with better eyes. That's me, seeing with better eyes.
Are you saying that Rainey and I are Michael Biehn?
Yeah, I mean, that's not a bad place to be.
I was going
to
say, that's kind of cool.
And I am,
we're going to have to take steps.
And I am frizzy-haired, dying Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio.
Cool.
Listen, right. The Abyss is a good movie, and go see it.
How old is that movie? Also 30 years?
It's over 30.
It's over 30.
Because it was the 80s.
Oh, okay.
It was like 85, right?
No, it was later. I think it's like 87 or 88 even.
Mm.
All right. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back and talk about comics for the week. We are talking comics for the week of Wednesday, June 8th, and it's a big week.
It is.
This is like, it's a little weird. I think June 1st, weirdly, even though it was technically first week, became the like fifth week somehow, because last week was sort of lighter. This week is not a light week. In fact, it's the busiest DC week I've ever seen.
I was going to say, it's a big week in general, but super big for DC.
So DC went whole hog on Pride this week.
Yeah, Just if you glance over our DC shelf, you will see some really beautiful covers, just for starters.
Yep. Yeah, so we did get a lot of the Pride covers. Special order for that. We didn't even get those. actually, I just realized that.
That's an aside for us.
Yeah, for us. We actually need to make sure and pull those. but also,
about the centerpiece of it.
We got the DC Pride 2022 special. It is a $10 anthology.
It's got like, it's actually like square bound. That means, yeah. You know, it's got like an actual spine to it.
It's like 80 pages.
Like a little graphic novel.
At any rate, it has three different covers. They're all great. Like, good luck picking your favorite cover because they're all really good.
Yep, but as far as like maybe like the one that's going to pop a little bit, I think, is the Harley and Ivy one. Very sweet cover with the pair of them.
That one was actually supposed to be the incentive, and retailers asked them to make it open order so we could get more of them.
Yeah, it's super
and
good.
And they did.
And but like just the basic rainbow one with all the different their characters on it, which is like
really good.
Super good.
And that wraparound with all the characters is also really good.
Mm-hmm.
So this is there are 12 stories in here, written by a variety of writers and artists. There is a introduction by Nicole Maines, who plays Dreamer on Supergirl.
Yep.
Who is one of the first transgender superheroes.
Yep.
And it's a really good intro.
It is.
And then the stories include, like, everybody you would think. So it's got, like, Son of Kal-El, which is John Kent. It's got...
Tim Drake Robin?
Nubia. It's got Tim Drake Robin. It's Connor Hawke. It's got Batgirl or Batwoman.
You know, one of the
It's got
cool...
the new Aqualad.
One of the cool thing that sort of outros it, too, is... I think this kind of only just hit the mainstream recently, but Kevin Conroy, simply the most famous Batman voice actor of all time, for many people, the voice of Batman from Batman the Animated Series and many projects after it, is gay. And I think most people just didn't know it. He doesn't live a very public life. But he has a comic in this that he produces where he talks about growing up gay and struggling to kind of break into the entertainment industry and, you know, his work as an actor. And I already liked him a lot because I listened to a long-form interview with him that Kevin Smith did years ago on his Batman podcast. And he was a great... He was actually my favorite interview of all the ones that I listened to. I was like, I thought Kevin Conroy was the best. He's a super interesting guy. And, but yeah, he kind of tells his story here. So, there's a lot going on in this, and it's recommended.
Yeah, it's
tons of good art and stuff in it too.
Yeah, and it's also like the Ray is in here, which is a character I forgot was gay.
Yeah, yeah.
And of course, there's a Harley and Ivy story. It's all really nice. It's a really good little anthology. Poison Ivy gets a theoretically ongoing series. I think this is a mini series that, if it sells well, could become an ongoing.
I think it's in the same way the Joker had an ongoing.
Yeah,
I think we were all fascinated by this, even as we were slightly unsure of its direction.
Yeah. So creatively, it's G. Willow Wilson from Ms. Marvel.
Yep.
And Marcio Takara, who's a great artist.
That artist, art's insane, and sometimes very creepy. Like her, like the plants she's got that have like these fungal spores that erupt in people, and like leave them kind of husks. It's creepy. It's like, it's not super gross out or anything like that.
But this feels
cool looking.
This feels like it belongs in like Vertigo. Like in an earlier time, in the this, swamp this would have been a Vertigo book. This is a very Swamp Thing-ish take.
Yeah,
that because, is by the way who she's talking about it. She mentions him as the Green Man or whatever.
Yeah. So basically, this is a very villainous take. She is basically trying to cause a mass extinction with her plant powers.
And by the way, it's very tied into recent continuity where she had become like almost like a plant elemental. Yeah. I think. And has been, I think, what she's... It was sort of stripped of her, right? She has been reborn back into human body.
Yep.
And is going through processing a lot of trauma, I'd say.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a scene that was actually almost difficult to read, a page where she and Harley are fighting.
Yeah.
And, like, Harley's just, like her makeup is all smeared from crying so hard. And it's, like, it's difficult to read.
But it was really well written.
Yeah, so that's the thing. It's, like, it has good writing, it has good art. So even though we were kind of thinking maybe you don't want to make one of the breakout lesbian characters at DC... go full villainous.
Yeah, it's weird to regress her back to villain. It almost feels like an agenda because World's Finest did it too. Like Mark Waid's World's Finest also presented her like a super villain. And like, is someone at DC? Is there an editor who's like, no, she's a better villain. Let's make her a villain again.
It could be,
which I don't think people want.
But yeah, Mark Waid's thing sort of just felt like World's Finest. I really like that book, but it kind of seems like it's just its own thing.
Yeah.
I don't think it's particularly like tied into any DC continuity. It feels
this one is definitely tied into continuity.
This one is, but also there's reasons that like immediately by the end of this issue we see that there's a reason why her master plan may not quite come off the way she wants.
Yeah,
and she's killed a few people. What villain hasn't?
That's the thing. I
don't think it's going to get into mass extinction territory.
Yeah. I am a little put off by the tone of it, which is a weird call, but the execution is so good that I'm very into it.
Yeah, I feel like anybody who's like vaguely curious about it should give it a shot.
Then we've got Multiversity Teen Justice. This is a Pride book. It's a Multiversity book, and it is an alternate world. It's Earth 11.
I was going to say, tell me what a Multiversity book is.
It's basically part of the multiverse.
Okay,
so it takes place on a different Earth. In this case, Earth 11, which is a gender swapped world.
Oh, interesting. Okay,
and is the Teen Justice team is like a female Robin, Aqua Girl, Clarion, the Witch Girl, Kid Quick, and Supergirl, and then a gender swap Donna Troy, who is Troy.
Okay. Oh, how clever.
And it's a team book. They're dealing with a Teen Titans villain that you will recognize. And if you're into the idea of a sort of gender flipped Teen Titans alternate world,
or just looking for like a teen superhero comic,
it's interesting. Then we've got, of course, Dark Crisis number one. This is DC's big event. This is spinning out of Death the Justice League, which also got a reprint this week. So if you missed Justice League 75, that is reprinted this week. But basically, a big name DC villain. I don't know if we want to say, probably not. A big name sort of cosmic villain of the DC universe. Has killed the Justice League and is trying to destroy the multiverse. And
even as that is happening, basically all the other villains in the DC universe are pushing hard while the Justice League is down.
Yep.
They're like, now is when we can take over.
Yeah, I'm going to do our...
I think the most notable thing about this, by the way, is that none of us, I think, were particularly looking forward to it, and we all thought it was a pretty good first issue.
Yeah, and this is all... Basically, this first issue, I don't know what it's going to be about, but the first issue is about John Kent forming a new Justice League.
Or trying to.
And then we get a look at what the new roster that Justice League is going to look like. And it's a weird, interesting roster.
It is. Yep.
But it's also that, like, part of the story to me that was interesting was actually not the Justice League, but the difficulty has in forming it. Mm-hmm. Like, there's, like, thematics in this about how difficult it is to sort of make that magic happen a second time. Even though, like, it's very respectful of Jonathan Kent and, like, definitely showing that he is a potent hero, but you can't just... The Justice League was such a maybe perfect sort of thing that it's hard to just make it happen again. He can't just suddenly be his dad, and nobody else can just suddenly be those other heroes.
Yep.
And so watching him try to form it was actually really interesting.
And I also liked all, like, the conversations between people. I thought the stuff with Black Adam was really good.
Yeah. Black Adam is an interesting figure in this, rightfully distrusted by many people.
But the only official leaguer left.
By the way, Black Adam's assessment of the new league was hilarious.
Yeah.
He dresses him down kind of the way Namor, who he always has reminded me of, pointed ears and all, of. He's like, this one will betray you. This one is no good. This one is no good. Like, it's pretty harsh, Black Adam, but I appreciated his assessment.
Yep. There's also a new mini.
Oh, by the way, that had super good art.
It does have really good art. Yeah, it's Samperi.
Yeah.
I don't remember the full name. Daniel Samperi.
So yeah, people should give this a try. I did find that, like, if you haven't read, like, the prelude stuff leading up to it, it doesn't actually matter. You can just jump in on it.
There's a miniseries, Nubia, Queen of the Amazons, which takes place just prior to the Death of Justice League stuff.
Yep.
And it is Nubia basically taking over as Queen of the Amazons, just like it sounds like.
Right, because that was just established. They had that sort of battle for control of the supremacy of the Amazons recently. Yeah.
But it has some guest stars, Batman, Flash, Hawkgirl.
Oh, okay.
It is sort of her, not her year one, but her becoming sort of the new Queen of Amazon Island.
Nice.
And then we got the Black Label book by Rom V and Christian Ward. Oh, it is Christian Ward doing the art. That's why I thought it liked Christian Ward. It's Aquaman Andromeda, which seems to be sort of a Cthulhu-esque take on the underwater world of Aquaman.
This is one of their Black Label.
Yeah.
It's that oversized Black Label format.
There's going to be, like, sea monsters and stuff.
Yeah, if you want to see a, like, kind of, like, eerie tone Aquaman story, that's this is your guy.
Yep. Yeah.
And that's, by the way, although the trench stuff that they did, like, with Geoff Johns' run, which also made its way into the movie, right?
Yeah.
Has hinted at that. This is a much deeper dive, no pun intended, into these kind of ideas.
You and your Aquaman puns.
Then we've got a big release from Marvel this week is Fortnite Marvel Zero War. It's polybag, so none of us have read it.
Correct.
But it is written by Christos Gage, who also did the DC one. Yep.
And in it, I assume, as someone who knows about these things, that the Marvel Universe teams up with the man Fortnite,
mm-hmm.
The greatest hero of the game Fortnite,
mm-hmm.
and he's like, the end of the world will occur in a fortnight. We must stop it.
That sounds right to me. Anyway, if you like Fortnite,
as little as we know about it, it's probably going to be our best-selling book this week. Obviously, if you're into Fortnite and you've got kids or friends who are into it, you should check it out because they've done the cool DC crossovers, but this is the first Marvel one, right?
And also, like I say, Christos Gage is a good writer. When I read of the DC Fortnite, despite the fact that I know nothing about it, was actually pretty good.
Yeah.
And it also includes some sort of digital download for something
some
within
Marvel
the game.
Thing in the Fortnite game.
And I'm sure if you collect all of them, you'll get
another
something
thing.
Bigger.
So in addition to another part of the Hulk-Thor Banner of War thing, the Thor this week, there's another Thor book. There's Jane Foster and the Mighty Thor, a miniseries by Torin Grønbech, who was the co-writer of Jason Aaron's Thor
partner.
Stuff.
Another chance for the Jane Foster Thor to return.
Yep, yep.
Valkyrie before.
She's actually still Valkyrie in this.
Yes.
Now,
but they must be returning her to Thordom, right?
She may be. There's like one panel of her becoming to Thor, but she decides not to become Thor.
Okay. Huh.
So it may be more. Because it says Jane Foster and the Mighty Thor. I believe this is more of a synergy.
And the Mighty Thor.
Yeah, I think they're sort of synergizing with the movie and they want to have them on the covers.
Okay.
But this will be a Jane Foster as she is in the Marvel Universe. With Thor.
Okay.
There's some villain going around recruiting Asgardian villains.
Well, I haven't read this yet, but I know that I liked what I read of her as Valkyrie.
Yep.
So I like that character.
It also has very pretty artwork. We've got the one-shot. This is a much delayed. This is supposed to be out for Free Comic Book Day.
Yeah.
Star Wars Chrysanthemum, That is the Wookiee bounty hunter who you saw in Book of Boba Fett.
Yep, you know him, you love him. He flings you around against walls.
So here he is in. This is a reprint of Star Wars 14 and 15, number 20, and the Dr. Aphra annual, all focused on Chrysanthemum.
So this is also a big collection, like a big reprint thing. The art in this is through the roof good.
Yeah, it is.
It's Mike Mayhew, Mike Deodato, Salvador LaRocca. Like, you know, we often see these little mini collections of like three or four comics that are kind of recent ones of note. And like, yeah there's always varying degrees of art, but rarely have I seen the percentage of quality this high.
Yeah.
Yeah, this also features some of his biggest battles. There's a fight with Obi-Wan Kenobi,
mm-hmm.
a fight with Chewbacca, as you might expect would happen. And then the Aphra one, I know Leia is involved mm-hmm. in some, but we also get 000 and BT, the crazy...
What are those from?
Dr. Aphra, they're her...
Oh, right, her kind of like crazy
droids. Yeah, yep. Image presents... Skybound presents After School. This is a series of one-shot stories that we think are all going to be horror, but I'm not really sure.
Yeah, I mean, sci-fi, horror, kind of...
Yeah.
They all seem to have that kind of bent.
So this is...
the first issue is about a young woman, right?
So this is Justin Benson and Aaron Moorhead, who I can't remember where I know these writers from. I feel like they may be TV writers. I'm looking to see where
they didn't, like, do Miss... the Captain Marvel stuff, did they?
Oh, maybe they did. I'm going to look that up real quick.
So premise-wise, though, she's a young woman who, what would you say, she's like sort of directionless and kind of apathetic until she gets a dog?
She's got anxiety.
Yeah, she has anxiety, right.
It's the anxiety thing. And then she gets it's not a trauma dog. What's it called?
Emotional support.
Support animal. What?
From they did VHS and they did they did work on Moon Knight and Archive 81.
Okay, so they're horror guys.
Yes.
Okay. And then
are not quite what they seem with the dog.
Their dog is maybe some stuff going on. I really liked this.
I did
thought
too.
It was a really fun one shot story. I think Dave was not as impressed as we were, but I thought the art was good. I liked it as a one-shot story.
I was glad I read it. I wasn't super into it overall, but I was glad I read it, and the art, again, the art was super good. Yeah. A lot of memorable scenes.
It's honestly one of my favorite things I read this week. I really liked it.
It certainly does not, by the way, feel like anything I've read in a while.
Dark Horse presents The Ward, which is a story of a woman who works in a secret hospital for, like, monsters, basically. Like, minotaurs and... There's all the goblins and all this kind of stuff, and she quit the hospital, but she gets drawn back in, and it's basically a medical procedural show set in a
fantasy world.
It's a good first issue. I liked it.
That's a good concept.
Yeah. It's an interesting first issue. Aftershock has a book from Mark Sable called Where Starships Go to Die, which is starts off being in sort of this near future. It's in 2075. The world is dying because of climate change. They sent off this multinational crewed ship that crashed back to Earth. And a pilot who didn't get on it is sort of bitter about it. And he's approached by a woman who has some kind of crazy plan to find and use the ship. And that is just the start of it. There are twists and turns galore. This is a big, giant sci-fi story. There's also this week the latest... We're at the midpoint of Dark Knights of Steel, Tom Taylor's fantasy book.
DC Game of Thrones.
Some great moments in that issue.
We got a second issue of Twig, Scotty Young and Kyle Strom's.
That fantasy in the style of, like, Never Ending Story or, you know, kind of like, not it's not as spooky like Dark Crystal. More like Labyrinth.
Yeah.
That's what
third issue of Amazing Spider-Man, which I think we're all... of mixed opinions, but all sort of enjoying it.
It's interesting. You know, I feel like, by the way, if nothing else, John Romita Jr.'s artwork, I think, is really good.
It is.
And brutal sometimes. My God, this was a brutal issue.
It was.
I also like the elevation of Tombstone into a bigger threat than he usually is shown
as. Well, you know, Kingpin got so kind of, in some ways, overplayed, even though I always do like Kingpin, and he got to be the big star of, what was the Daredevil thing?
Devil's Reign.
Yep. I think kind of shifting some focus to another one of the big crime lords of New York is a good idea. And Tombstone, has a great visual, it turns out to be an interesting character.
Yeah, in some ways...
some slightly weird focus on him.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Is this just a stealth tombstone book at times?
Yeah, it is weird.
But it is fascinating. I kind of have to see how the story wraps before I can kind of have a big opinion on it. But I'm enjoying the ride with occasional apprehension.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm up to.
And the art's fantastic, so that makes it all go down.
And there's a couple big Image trades this week. There's Swing Volume 5, which concludes that story. It was a good solid ending, I thought.
And for people don't know, it's like it's from the what do you call the school of Stefan Sedgwick.
And, yeah, that's
yeah, Sunstone and all that.
I
yeah,
mean, he's not actually involved. His wife was involved with the first volume.
Right, right. I just is his wife not still working on it?
No,
oh, interesting. Yeah. But yeah, I've read a decent number of those. This one is like a sort of realistic and character-centric version of somebody getting into the world of swinging.
Yeah.
And it's well done. It reminds me a lot of sort of stuff like Strangers in Paradise back in the day.
It's got a romantic comedy vibe to it as well as the sexy stuff.
Yeah.
And then there's Crossover Volume 2, which that book got weirder and weirder, and I kind of enjoy it.
That's Donny Cates' sort of meta superhero commentary.
Yep.
Yeah.
Am I misremembering, isn't there a hardcover collection of May's book, Lemire's
new?
Oh,
yeah, I forgot about May's book, yeah.
I remember when I was doing subs and stuff, I saw that was on there, and that was really good.
It's about a father whose daughter was killed or disappeared.
I think she disappeared.
Yeah. And then he gets, like, a weird...
cryptic messages that she literally loved mazes and things as a child. Yeah. And, like, there's this notion that he may have to, like, travel through some sort of maze that may be both metaphorical and physical to try and find her, that she may still be alive. I really like the first few issues, and I always like Jeff Lemire, so I need to read that now that it's collected.
All right. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back and talk about a whole bunch of TV. Sort of. All right, so there's a lot of TV to talk about, and we're not going to talk about most of it, because Nick is...
I was hoping we would talk about all TV.
Nick is only... Well, it is all TV, but Nick is not the time. It's his only one who's had time to watch any of this stuff, so it's on the horizon for us to talk about, but I think the thing we're going to mention is that Boys Season 3 just started.
Yep.
And that's just three episodes of that. Strange Things Season 4, which there's 7 episodes, and it's
Seven... Seven episodes there. The links are pretty long. Some go to an hour and 20 minutes.
Yeah.
The Orville returns this week.
Yep.
With its... I guess it was last week.
Yeah.
And their opening episode was an hour and 10 minutes.
There's a lot of TV to watch.
Yeah.
And we didn't have time for any of it.
I did. I watched
a whole bunch of TV. I was at a TV festival instead, and so I did not see it. But I did, when I was at the TV festival... get to watch the first season or first season 3 episode of Evil.
Right, that's the CBS or Paramount Plus show that we've
Mike
talked
Coulter
about.
I learned that this is Mike Coulter, Anna Katya something. And Asif Manvi are the three guys. They were all there. They had great chemistry. They're fun to watch.
We've talked about this show a lot, but it's basically an X-Files-esque show about a small group of people investigating things for the Catholic Church.
Yep.
Sometimes possessions, but a lot of times much more strange and weird stuff. And it always walks this line between, like, is it possible that what we saw was supernatural, or was there a real explanation?
And you find yourself yelling at your TV a lot for them to talk as a group.
But on the plus side, though, like, when it's good, like, those characters sing, the creepy stuff is creepy, and it has a lot of neat ideas.
And I think it did suffer a bit from pandemic shooting, that kind of thing, because... One of the things I learned at this panel is that season 2 was filmed for CBS and then put onto Paramount Plus.
Uh-huh.
Season 3 was filmed for Paramount Plus, and you can tell the difference because there's some real sexy stuff and there's a lot of language.
Wait, they already in season 2 had language.
It's more so.
Oh, okay. Because I heard them drop the F-bomb once or twice. And there was sexy stuff with an animal mask in it.
Sure.
That was some weird shit.
Yeah. It is weird. I will say, I think they're doing some... Wallace Shawn is a guest star this season. I don't know if he's going to be in the whole thing, but he's like the center of the procedural plot of the first episode, which I thought was really interesting. I had lost a little bit of faith in the show. The second season is a little all over the map in terms of its ongoing stories.
Yeah.
But the first episode back is good, and it's going to be on in about 2 weeks, so you guys can see. We'll probably talk about it then.
Evil has been one of those, like, there's not a ton of shows I keep up with, but it like kind of... it hits just the right balance for me of good character and creepy too.
Mm-hmm. And it's
and like I do get like occasionally I do think it's a little unfocused or like I want them to zero in a little bit more, but the ride is almost always good. Like I rarely watch an episode and don't really enjoy a lot of it.
Well, yeah, and it also sort of experiments a lot, too. The no-talking episode, which they do talk in the middle of it.
At the monastery.
The monastery was very, very cool.
Yep.
Yeah.
The elevator episode was fun.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's just tons of neat ideas in there. And I probably, every episode I watch, at some point I'm like, what the hell?
Yeah.
You know, just something in there that I'm just I can't believe it.
You were the one who told me that like, there are certain little glimpses of weird things cut into the actual episodes, right?
Right. Well, I've found a few of them. I don't think they make a big deal out of this.
No.
But, I spotted something at one point, in a freeze frame, or, I just noticed, some flicker of light, and I'm like, oh, that looked like a face in it or something. And I went back, and it took a bit of work, but, it's still framing through just for, a frame or two. There was this creepy demonic face floating over a kid's bed, and it was creepy.
To tell you, doing that on the Paramount Plus app is hard work because that app sucks.
The app does suck. Although it's definitely it's better on some depending on what you're watching it through. I don't know I'm watching it through the apps of a PlayStation 4.
Yeah,
that's what I have. But I've seen, and it's very sluggish for me. Literally, there's a delay between every button press. But I've seen it on other people's systems, and I don't know what all y'all watch through.
I watch on Apple TV.
Apple TV, whatever.
It's very smooth on Apple TV.
And I've seen it be completely smooth, so...
And I watch it on Vizio TV, and it sucks.
Clearly...
Vizio TV is the worst. Vizio TV is an awful, awful app.
Yep.
Get yourself a Roku, Nick. Fire or something.
Randy, I think you were, in some ways, the person who was, sort of most put off by some of the directionlessness in season two.
Yep.
But... You met the stars, and they conned you into wanting to watch it again?
No.
I'm just kidding.
They showed it first, and then they brought the stars out, so...
Yeah, no, I'm happy to see that it's got you kind of back drawn into it again, because, Evil is a show I really want to like, and I was a little sad that it just...
Was
that,
it just the actors, or did the...
Just the actors.
Okay, I didn't know if the Kings...
No, just the actors.
I would love to, see an interview with them, just to, what are you doing?
Well, that's the thing. That's why I was told Dave that I didn't ask him. We only had two questions anyway, but I would have asked the question what happened? What happened to that story and this story? Anyway, it was good. I also saw Rutherford Falls season 2, which I don't know if y'all have seen that. It's on Peacock.
I did not.
It's a Mike Schur show, so he's one of the guys behind it. But it has the creator is a Native American woman, and it is about a sort of a casino land.
Hmm.
And it had Ed Helms as the lead.
This show just completely dropped off my radar.
It's really good. And it is about sort of this well-meaning but ultimately blowhardish kind of white guy, and learning that his ancestor maybe was not such a great guy. And it's also got this very driven Native American casino owner who's really interesting, and his the woman who is best friends with Ed Helms runs the museum that's in the casino, and she is a very interesting character. And there's a guy making a podcast about the town. And there is an assistant who is a non-binary character who's really, really fascinating.
Hmm.
So it is all... The first season's really good. And it ramps up slowly, but it becomes a really good show. And the second season just opens up with just a slam bang. They nailed what made the show work, and it's really funny. This is one of those kind of Girls 5 Eva on Peacock that people are sleeping on. And Peacock has just amazing shows.
Okay.
One of the other shows they have that wasn't technically there is one called Killing It.
Okay.
It's Craig Robinson, and it is about the real-life snake killing contest that goes on in Florida.
You talked about this. Yeah.
So there was one of the panels I went to was funny people. It was called Funny AF, I think.
Okay.
Craig Robinson was on it. Ed Helms was on it. The showrunner from Peacock from Rutherford Falls. A woman who I don't remember what she's on, American Auto. And I think her name is Jema X or something I don't remember. I remember the name. She was hilarious. And then a younger woman who got famous on TikTok.
Okay.
But my favorite thing from this panel is that you had a couple of questions at the end, and this guy stands up. He's probably in his late 20s, early 30s, and he's like, yeah, thanks everybody for coming to my birthday party. And Craig Robinson and Ed Helms, both of whom are known for their music stuff, did an a cappella rendition of Happy Birthday for him, which was great enough.
Yeah.
But then the guy asked this question. He's like, yeah, I'm a stand-up comedian. I've been at it for 13 years. Like, how do you break into this business? Which you never ask that question of these kind of panels. And they all gave him the most brutally honest answers of, like, you got to get to L.A. Like, hey, you've been doing this for 13 years, man. You're going to have to keep grinding at it. And maybe what you want isn't what you're, you know. And basically at the end of it, Craig Robinson's like, happy birthday, asshole. It was hilarious. If it had been me, I would have been so happy I asked that question. Because you get a rendition, you get a rendition of that, you get a bunch of answers, and you get Craig Robinson making fun of you. It was glorious. ATX Fest is great for that kind of stuff. Like, it is a very sort of small but big festival. There was a Justified reunion, there was a Scrubs reunion, both of which were really great. I recommend it to people who like TV and are in Austin.
Cool.
Nick, you watched a thing called Navalny. Navalny.
Russian name, yeah.
Yeah, it is a Russian name. It is about... Basically, he was a political opponent of Putin who actually garnered a lot of people wanting for him to basically beat Putin in the election.
And then he got poisoned.
So just to clarify, this is not like a fiction movie. No, this is a documentary.
This is a documentary that actually is like interviews with him and his wife and his two kids. Because at one point on a plane, he collapses and is screaming... A lot of this was caught on, like, phones and stuff like that. And the plane made an emergency landing. And he was rushed to a hospital. It was actually also a Russian-run hospital. So Putin, of course, you know, had a lot of things involved. But, it's about him finding out that he was... they tried to assassinate him. Putin tried to assassinate him.
So it's like, how do we know it's not just him saying it and poor Putin is maligned?
Because this documentary also takes into the fact a third party who runs a truth website kind of thing. Not like a state functioned or anything. He is actually like, he goes after like actual journalistic kind of integrity.
Right. This is somebody trying to be a journalist amidst Russia's state-controlled
media. This is a weirdly thing where they were trying to get this guy Navalny out of Russia for a while. His wife was trying to get him to an actual hospital that was actually doing something. Mm-hmm. And Andrea Merkel offered aid and finally got through, and I guess there was enough political pressure that I guess Putin decided, what the hell, doesn't really matter. And so he went to Germany for a while to sort of recoup. And during that time of recuperation and sort of, they did learn that he was poisoned with a poison only Russian, only Putin has
was
control
of. Was one of those radiation, or radioactive ones, or conventional poison?
It was a more conventional poison, but it was like created by like a group of... Like a group in Russia that was in control of that.
Maybe he poisoned himself just to make Putin look bad?
I don't think so.
Because I bet that story is out there by Putin's crazy people.
But basically, when Navalny and this other person who's sort of figures out that the people who actually tried to kill him, like he finds them rather quickly and can kind of narrow down exactly who they were. And it's them together sort of figuring out kind of the ins and outs of the people who were behind his assassination plot. And
how's his health now? Like, did he recover?
He did recover very well. He was back to normal. However, he being kind of a diehard, he believes that, you know, in politics and everything, he went back to Russia and was immediately arrested and went to prison. He sentenced to 20 years. And I don't remember, but it's Putin, so he made shit up.
Yeah.
I think it was like, it was because the his political affiliation was deemed a terrorist. Something along those lines.
Classic dictator move.
Yeah, you know.
Putin's got the big playbook.
But apparently, just recently, like 5 days ago, more charges were brought, so he's going to be in prison for longer.
Oh, boy. That's pretty brutal. This is a two-hour documentary?
Yeah,
series.
Two-hour documentary. Really, really good. They kind of frame it in this very espionage kind of Bourne's like ultimatum kind of sensibilities, because there are things, but there is literally a scene I have never seen before in real life, and it left my jaw on the floor. Huh. I was like, holy shit.
Okay, I think I'm going to watch this.
So this is on HBO Max. They just put it on last week.
Okay.
And it got recommended to me. I'm not huge into documentaries. My wife loves true crime, so she watches true crime nonstop. But documentaries sometimes don't really make it for me. This one, I highly recommend. It is entertaining, but also very, eye-opening in a lot of ways.
Okay, all right.
That sounds good.
And then I think we already talked about the first couple episodes, but the third episode of Obi-Wan Kenobi dropped, and we are actually all caught up on that show.
Yep.
Well,
and big stuff happened in this. As a big spoiler warning, you should go, if you're watching this at all or going to watch it, you should go watch it before you listen to us say what we're going to say. Mm-hmm. Because, big pause, okay, we give you your shot. this is the one where they, as much as said before this show came out, that this is going to have a big rematch between Obi-Wan and Vader. And in the episode prior to this, Obi-Wan just found out for the first time that Anakin was still alive. Like, he didn't know that he survived that. And
I thought they were going to wait on this.
I thought so too, which is why I was frustrated with my friends who jumped the gun and were all blabbing about it on Facebook and social media. I'm like, shut the hell up, people. Let me watch this stuff and find out in context. Because I thought he was going to, show in episode 6 or something.
Right.
Yeah.
But, man, he comes at him hard in this episode, which is a rather brutal episode. I'm trying to think what led up to it first, because Vader, because
they were on that planet. Remember, they're on the planet. Did they crash?
No, it was the...
This is the one where the whole first is a very suspenseful thing.
Yeah,
they're on a planet that they were sent to somebody was going to hopefully
Kamal Nanjiani gave him said that there were people on this planet that will help them.
And it's a by and large kind of empty planet, but it's like
it's been stripped.
They do mining and stuff,
but it's Imperial occupied.
And it's Imperial occupied, and we're not talking like thousands of soldiers everywhere. It's more like it's like big empty spaces, but checkpoints.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and they have to when they land on the automated ship they're on. This is Obi-Wan and young Leia. She's 10. They get a ride essentially along a country road in the hover car or whatever of a guy who I thought was Seth Rogen, but I have been informed is
Zach Braff.
I had the same thought, Dave.
Yep.
It didn't quite sound like him, but I'm like, this seems like a Seth Rogen voice.
Yep. I think his character's name is what, Fleck?
I think it is.
He's a piece of shit bootlicker too. They don't at first he just seems like a guy who just goes with the flow.
Yep.
He's like, hey, it's need a ride. Oh yeah. Oh, there's some stormtroopers up there that could use a ride too. Oh, I pick them. They're sometimes there. They'll just get in with you.
Prior to that, I thought it was a really good kind of meeting of minds between Leia and Obi-Wan, sort of like they were connecting and kind of you could sort of see the
they were
scenes.
Able to do a little bit more serious stuff and a little less of the banter from the previous episode.
But I like that they get in this truck, and as they're getting in the truck, they see the Imperial symbol, and it's like finding a Confederate flag on the truck of someone who rescues you from the road.
And then they while they're they get in the back of the truck at this four stormtroopers, and Obi-Wan's just kind of keeping his head down. They start asking him some stuff, and his, kind of awkward lies. I thought they did a great job of doing the kind of thing where it's he actually, because he stumbles at one point, he tells him about the name of, he makes up a...
Well, he calls Leia Leia.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And they're like, wait, I thought you said she was so-and-so. And he kind of does a decent cover, even though he says it a little awkwardly. He's like, well, she reminds me so much of her mother that sometimes I accidentally say her name. And I was like, that's pretty good,
man. I think... Leia creates that cover, doesn't she?
Yeah, it's shown.
Because what happened is, he failed his bluff check, and then she's like, can I help? And she rolled her bluff check.
Oh, neat. She didn't assist.
Yeah.
I will say, though, it's a kind of a subtle way of her using the Force to sort of, not manipulate things, but a sort of a wider understanding of the people around her.
Maybe, they haven't indicated it at all.
Oh, I think they have.
I mean, I don't
she's
feel
done
like
that a couple of times. When she dressed down Antilles, the kid...
Yeah.
She was definitely kind of like...
Do you feel like there was something more going on? Because I don't feel like the show has been indicating it.
Yeah.
Although, if after the fact, Obi-Wan or said something like, there's something about her, I think that, she may have the Force as well, and then they, showed a succession of these moments when she was doing it, I think that'd be a neat thing.
Well, I don't think she's, showing, doing Force, using it and, doing. I think she's inadvertently able to sort of
read
people.
But I don't think
people.
That they're showing it to we, the viewers, that that's happening.
Oh, it's happened too many times for it to be, like, a thing.
Interesting. I disagree, sir.
Oh, interesting.
But I think it's an interesting idea, and if it's in there, I think that that could work. But anyway, without giving... I don't want to, like, spoil every little detail, but the things get interesting and brutal with that ride with the farmer guy. By the end of it, at least one stormtrooper is in half.
That was rather brutal.
That was great. Kind of darkly funny, too.
We meet a new ally.
We meet a new ally. Who's the actress? You said
she is
she's one of the Sand Snakes in
she's the mom.
Game of Thrones.
She's from Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
She looked very familiar, and I'm like, who is that?
Yeah. But the big thing is Darth Vader comes to town, and he is like, he knows Obi-Wan is here, and it's a small, like, kind of a small village, you know, kind of clearly somewhat impoverished. People are all looking out their windows and taking cover in the streets, but there's lots of people around, and Vader starts, like, just killing them.
Yeah, he literally drags people through the thing, snaps a child's neck.
That was a kid. Brutal. Oh, God. I didn't know if I quite realized it was a kid. I have a smaller TV.
He had the dad, and the kid came out to, like, to beg
and
for his dad's life,
but
he just snapped
shit.
The dad. Yeah. He was torturing the dad, and then he kills the kid and leaves the dad alive. Like, it was brutal.
That's messed up. And the thing is, this all relates back to something that the Inquisitor, who she continues to... What's her character's
Reva.
Name? Reva. She said Reva, in the first episode, or maybe one of the other people, Inquisitors, said this, which is that they're like, Jedis catch themselves.
Yeah.
And then one of the ways they catch them is they hurt innocents until Jedis, their code draws them out. They try to help, and they catch them.
Yeah.
Yep. Kill them.
Yeah, but the fight with Obi-Wan, like, Obi-Wan is not using the Force, and he is not ready for Darth, and he just gets the shit kicked out of him.
Yeah. Just a quick backpedal. He has been, like, avoiding using the Force, because he's, like, he's throwing hands at people. He's, like, shooting people with a laser gun, and pretty good shot in this, by the way. When Darth Vader comes at him, he is doing, I'd say, more poorly than Luke did in Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah, yeah.
Vader's doing that one-handed fighting, and he is whooping his ass.
Yep.
Which is good. Like, also, just the way Vader was filmed, it was, like, these very dark alleys. There was just, like, the faint glow
of
his sword.
This is the way, what Darth
like
Vader
the Terminator.
Should be. Yeah, he should
be like
that.
It's like that Rogue One scene that everybody loves. It's him being that character.
And I think it's, I think it's in one way, it's showing him being worse than that one scene, because that one scene was all lightsaber fights, and everybody loves a good lightsaber of him cutting down people.
And they were all soldiers.
This is him showing that he
does not give
a shit.
Yeah, these are war crimes. Yeah.
That he is so desire to kill Obi-Wan that he will kill anyone.
So are we done talking about the good stuff? Because I have some gripes.
Do you?
Yes, I do.
Well, I do want to say, when we're talking about the good stuff, I felt that like what he does to Obi-Wan is also intense and was good, which is to say a sort of revenge, reverse revenge of what happened to him.
Yeah,
which is to say he knocks over this thing of fuel, lights it with
his
saber,
and
he uses the Force to pull Obi-Wan, drag him along the ground into these flickering flames.
Well, I don't think he was going to kill him. I think that was just the start.
Yeah,
he just was
torture.
Like,
man, this is you know, in case you thought, oh, maybe there's some Anakin left in there at the moment.
No.
Not at that point.
No. So here's where my problems go.
Okay.
One of them is a me problem. It's like, I'm having trouble squaring this with Rebels. Because the Inquisitor's dead.
No.
He's dead. They tell him he's dead.
Nope. I actually went looking for this, and there was an interview with
Which Inquisitor?
The Grand Inquisitor.
The one that she killed.
By the time this takes place, he had been killed in Rebels? Is that interesting?
No.
He is
he
alive
shows
in
back
Rebels
up
at this time.
Oh, right. And she had, like, she stabbed him in
Yeah,
Obi-Wan.
In the belly.
It looked very clear he was dead.
And Reva even says that, and blaming the death on Kenobi, and Vader is like, I don't give a shit.
Yeah, I know, that's what I'm saying. They said he was dead.
However, the writers are aware that this seems like a weird thing.
Okay.
That there's going to be a twist. The Grand Inquisitor is not dead.
All right,
well,
okay.
People, in a world that has the Force, I feel like there's a way that you might could survive that.
And also, I think the Grand Inquisitor is too powerful for just... for that to be the end.
Right. I don't like it. I'm a little away from it.
I was a little thrown by it, too.
Like, he basically got stabbed as much as Qui-Gon got stabbed and died of that.
Basically, what's going on is my brain is... And I try not to get hung up on continuity stuff too much, but because I like Rebels so much, I'm hung up on... This is Dave Filoni knows. Like, he knows all this stuff. And I'm like, wait, why are they doing this? This doesn't make any sense. And so I'm not fully engaged with the show because I'm trying to figure out where it takes place. And that kicks me out of it a little bit. So if you're going to do that, there better be a really good reason for it, and I haven't seen that yet. So we'll see. Related to, I don't love Obi-Wan Kenobi. I don't find him that interesting a character. And so I am sort of watching for the other characters. And so when they said, oh yeah, we've got a pilot, I was hoping it was going to be Hera or something, and instead it's nobody.
You know who I thought it was going to be? Dash Rendar.
Or something like that. I would have liked... I wanted there to be another, like, little bit of Easter egg character in this, and there wasn't.
Well, there was, in the sense that we got a Quinlan Vos.
Oh, you heard it mentioned.
Yeah, but that's so a big
fast,
thing.
So fast that I didn't even catch it.
Oh, really?
I got it.
Oh, yeah.
Now, whether it will have any real meaning or just be a an acknowledgement, I don't know.
See, that's the thing.
I bet
if Quinlan Vos was in it, I'll be happy about that. But
I
if
bet
it's
he
just
shows.
A nod,
nah. It's kind of weird to have it in there if they're not going to do something with it.
Well, it's kind of interesting. I listened
because he was like, Master Quinlan has traveled through here.
The other gripe I have, and it is similar kind of thing, is that this doesn't quite all square with... And this is the problem with Star Wars in general. It doesn't all square with the movies. Like, I don't understand... Like, this Vader doesn't deserve redemption. This Vader is a war criminal and a monster.
Well, I mean, he's already... We saw that in Star Wars.
Yeah.
He starts out by breaking the neck of a captured rebel trooper.
But that was a soldier.
But like, that was effectively torture, though. I mean, and they tortured people in other
in
movies.
Revenge of the Sith... I mean, the last prequel... I mean, he kills kids.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, he kills kids as Anakin, not as Vader.
And Vader oversaw the destruction of Alderaan along with everybody else, even if somebody else pushed the button.
I mean, in a sense, he should not have had redemption regardless, but some bit of Anakin, the one that Qui-Gon was sort of...
All right.
Who wanted to sort of nurture.
That's fair.
My argument has always been that he can't redeem himself to the rest of the galaxy that he committed these crimes against.
To Luke.
He could redeem himself to his son.
Yeah.
That's fair. Okay, I'll buy that. The other one is when Ben and Darth meet. Very famously, Darth is like, "When last we met, I was but a learner. Now I am the master." And I'm like, "But you guys have met since then. Did you not remember that part?" Because at this point, he is definitely the skilled one among the two of them. And it takes away this having the rematch, which cool as it was, takes away from the original rematch between Ben Kenobi and Darth Vader.
Go ahead, Nick. I'm no prizing this.
Yep.
Because the writer's room has to figure they have a plan to sort of square it, at least somewhat.
Here's the thing. I may retract all of these complaints when I get to the end of it. It bothers me.
I can certainly see that, like, at the end of this, Obi-Wan does sort of, like, fake out where he dies.
Well, maybe
I liked what you came up with.
Vader, by the way, might have been like... he still considered himself a learner at the time. Like, he's gotten, you know, only better and better.
Wouldn't it make sense, though, if, like, he ultimately thinks he kills Obi-Wan? That makes him the master. At the end of this, if he kills Obi-Wan in some way, even if Obi-Wan tricks him...
We think he's going to...
And that
Obi-Wan is dead?
Because
it is a little... I mean...
That's why he, like, abandons the quest.
Yeah, because that's the thing. If Obi-Wan is still alive out there, I don't think Vader would stop.
You know, I just had a thought would be cool if they showed, like... If you see, like, Vader, like, behead him or something that you're just like, what did he just do? And you're like, Obi-Wan used all his force powers that he hadn't been the whole time, and he basically planted, like, a vision in his head or something like that.
Well, I liked the idea that you came up with the other...
Remind me what it even was.
That because of all the burns and stuff that he's obviously suggested, that he goes into sort of a force...
Like sort of healing thing.
Healing, but it ages him slightly.
Right, and that's why...
He uses up his life force, that's why he's older and...
Because when Alec Guinness plays him, he is supposed to be just like 10 years from then.
Yeah.
And he looks like he's like 20 or 30 years older.
He looks a little older. So you can no-prize all this stuff. I'm hoping the writer's room feels the same way.
Yeah.
And I feel like they do. I think...
But we also know things do get messy, and in a way, because I feel like I've...
Yeah.
It's not just... And just not just Star Wars, but, like, all the superhero comics I've ever grown up with are so convoluted.
But the Quinlan thing makes sense because there's a huge episode in Clone Wars, the cartoon, where Obi-Wan and Quinlan team up and work together.
And then I think it was... Dave, were you and I talking about this? That Obi-Wan is, like, the investigator? Like, this is kind of cool.
Right. Yeah. This was something that was one of the cooler elements of the prequels, which was Obi-Wan out tracking down Kamino and the clone facility and stuff. And I will say, this is just purely a personal thing, but yes, I do think Obi-Wan is an interesting character.
I do, too.
I like him, and I find, like, he's a good addition to the main roster of core
well, this
characters.
Episode also gave us the scene between he and Leia where he said he remembered when the Jedi took him, and he remembers his mother and father in kind of like his dad's hand and his mother's scarf, but he said he remembered a brother too. So it's interesting that they're adding these layers of not only of his family, but also that the Jedi kind of took kids too in a lot of ways.
You know what I would like to see, and this is something that they've touched on, but like haven't, like sometimes they've said, yes, the Jedi like lost their way or became too bureaucratic or whatever. Yeah. I would like to see Yoda or one of the big guns say, "It, you know, it is sad that we have to take kids. I wish we didn't have to do that.
Right.
But, you know, the Force requires the kind of discipline that that's the only way that we know how to do it." And if he said something like, maybe one day we'll be able to find a better way to do it, but for right now, if we want to access the Force, it's how we have to do it. Like, I wish that they would just say those words. I want to hear somebody say, yeah, sorry about taking your kid. Which I do think, like, generally, unlike the Sith, they don't just go and grab them. They, you know, like, Qui-Gon was like, we want to train your son in Phantom Menace.
In Jedi ways. And by the way, you have to stay a slave. Sorry about that.
But he did, he basically, he asked the mother. And what, he asked Anakin.
What do you think the odds are, like, money down, do we see Liam Neeson?
No.
Yes.
I'm leaning towards yes.
They've mentioned a few times
they
him
keep mentioning he's trying to contact him. I don't think it's...
And you don't think they'll pay off their...
I don't.
It's the Chekhov's Qui-Gon.
Chekhov's Qui-Gon.
Yeah.
The Qui-Gon must go off.
Even if he... even if he does some, like, ADR work or, like, just comes in and just records
a few things...
They just
spliced in some stuff from Taken.
And also, here's my other question to you. How do you guys feel about the Vader voice? Because you know this is not James Earl Jones.
You know what's weird? I thought it was James Earl Jones.
It's not.
But how come I keep seeing these articles saying that James Earl Jones returned to do voices?
I looked into it.
He's
a couple of articles.
Obi-Wan.
Well, no, they're using like his voice, but he's like.
No, they're doing the same thing that they did with like with Luke, where it's like an algorithm.
It's like the re-speecher or something.
Okay, all right.
So, because this definitely sounds exactly like he did in episode.
Four. It sounds exactly like it.
Like, because I know James Earl Jones came back and did voice work for Rebels and the Rogue One. And you could definitely tell a difference.
Yeah.
He was a little older sounding.
So what's this CNN article that says James Earl Jones is back as voice of Darth Vader and Obi-Wan Kenobi?
But he is. He's being like...
It is his voice.
He's doing it and then they're altering it to make it sound like young Vader. Not like a 90-year-old dude.
The articles I've read and the people that I've talked to that I... Like podcasts and stuff that I sort of trust said it was... Like his old like voice work that they've basically put into ReSpeecher, which is a computer program, and basically it can say whatever it wants, which is weird and kind of ethically kind of like I don't know, but
yeah, it's a little creepy.
I don't know. Disney hasn't come out and like said that it was James Earl Jones or anything, even though he is in the credits.
Yep.
But in the alt in the bigger credits, they do say put ReSpeecher or whatever that program is.
Huh. Anyway, I thought it was good. I think it works.
It sounded good to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the stuff with Luke previous to this that we heard in Boba Fett, I thought was a little shaky. Somehow didn't quite sound right.
Yeah.
But it was pretty good too.
But the technology has jumped leaps and bounds from that from Peter Cushing and Rogue One.
Yes.
To Luke to now Vader.
Well, that's the Vader's the voice stuff.
Yeah.
The visual technology when they do a full CG person like they've been doing with Luke still isn't there yet.
I thought the Luke looked pretty darn good.
He was all right, but it wasn't quite
better. But I think I prefer it when there's a live action actor like that they de-age or something like that.
Isn't that what they did with Luke? Or the new Mark
I thought
Hamill
he was
there?
Like maybe all CG.
Oh, I don't know.
I don't know exactly. I don't want to say because I don't quite know.
I actually think he could be a claymation Muppet.
Oh, you're right. That's what it was. It was a little off, but interesting.
You can see the people operating it if you squint.
All right.
I'm just excited to see where Obi-Wan goes. Out of all the things that are occurring this week, I'm most excited
for. Not to spoil anything, he's going back to Tatooine.
I know,
he's
but...
He's going to live in a cave for 20 years.
No, you don't know, Randy. It could be his brother, who he finds in the next episode or two, who looks close to him, and is slightly older.
I still maintain it would have been amazing if Leia had splatted, and it turns out that Leia's been dead this whole time, and that they brought in that spice dealer as Leia. And that's why it's okay that she and Luke kissed, because it's not actually his sister.
This has all been a long con to make the kiss okay.
Yeah, it's a long con for that. It's so that your fanfic isn't as creepy.
Yep. So that's probably what's going to happen.
Sure.
But I do like they you know, like Vader going after him and sees it in the episode 3, the suspense stuff. Like it's been
now that the Empire has Leia, intriguing. Which is
what if the whole thing is that slowly but surely they're going to reveal that everyone was replaced, so Luke isn't Luke. Leia, Vader, Obi-Wan is an Obi-Wan. All the stuff in the prequels, it actually wasn't those characters.
Yeah, that's what we give them the opening to redo the prequels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because
What you were just watching was a bunch of people replaced in their crib.
Yeah,
those people were
replaced. Yeah, that's Darth Vader. That's not actually Anakin Skywalker. That guy died.
That was Darth Vapor.
That was Darth Vapor.
God.
And on that note, that is all we got this week. We'll be back next week with more. Until that time,
yo, Joe.
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.